This is Ryan Whooper, and you're listening to Section 113 with Travis Demers and Michael Holton.
Welcome in the Section 113 podcast with Michael Holton. I'm Travis Demers, and the Trailblazers coming off of a stretch of four games in the last week or so since we last came to you. A couple of wins in Memphis over the Grizzlies, and a couple of hard-fought games over two of the top teams, well, right now the two top teams in the Western Conference with Minnesota and Oklahoma City. And you know, Michael, with 21 games left of this in the season, there are still a bunch of injuries, still a bunch of guys who are out. We don't know who's coming back and when. Hopefully some reinforcements soon. But you know, I think that the last week has really showed a lot of the mental toughness, you know, what the stomach is like for this Trailblazers team.
Yeah, we've kind of passed through that zone of next man up. Every night we're not really sure, you know, who's going to be available, what the chemistry and combinations are going to be. But what we do know about this team is that the guys are going to lock in, play hard, play together, embrace the game plan. And we know that the staff has showed their ability to put together game plans in a short time span that still reflect a cohesive effort and energy.
Yeah, and players have had to step up. You know, obviously, you win a couple of games on the road, very different fashion. You blow out the Grizzlies and then come back from down 18 to win that game. And then against Minnesota, you know, there were times where Anthony Simons was on the floor with four rookies, and there were times where he wasn't on the floor at all. Jeremy Grant, Matisse Thybulle come back for the game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But you've had to get performances from Dwop Reith, from Ryan Rupert, from Chris Murray, from Delano Banton, from Ashton Hagens, from all of these guys who at one point or another were not in the rotation or not on the roster or not in the team's plans for the immediate future. So to have all of these guys find ways to step up and do it with effort, the one thing that you can control regardless of who is on the floor, I think that's been impressive.
It has been, and there's been a maturity that we've seen in the young players. They've had to go from not being in the room or being on the floor with veterans that they had to defer to. And we saw that earlier in the year. If you were on the floor with Anthony Simons or Jeremy Grant, you felt like a role player. You needed to screen and make sure you got them a touch. And you watch the young guys, I wouldn't say play tentatively, but try to embrace a role in order to stay on the floor.
Yeah.
And what we've seen through their maturity and their growth is they are more comfortable and confident being assertive.
To that point, you know, Chauncey Billups has talked about roles. And when this team was constructed, you know, over the summer and into the fall, everybody healthy, the young guys have very specific roles, like you mentioned. So for a player who has to find something to get on the floor, a young guy, whether that be their ability to defend, their ability to rebound, their ability to shoot, whatever it is, and then players start getting hurt, and now you're asked to perform in a role that was not the plan. What's that like for a player?
Well, it's opportunity. It's what you expect as a young player. You just don't know when you're going to get the opportunity to develop.
Yeah.
And so what Chauncey Billups has done with this group is, it started by, you just got to play hard, right? That's kind of the default meter. Okay, you play hard. Now you play well, you contribute, you play a role. And now it's progressed to, you need to find a way to have an impact on the floor. And so these young guys now are playing impactful basketball. When you look at Ashton Hagens, Delano Banton, you go down the line, you see everybody's having an impact. They're not just getting on the floor trying to make sure that the plus minus is a positive while they're there. They're trying to drive the needle.
Right. Some of these guys have had an opportunity to play in the G League this year. Some of these guys have played quite a bit in the G League. Some have been back and forth, up and down on the roster, and have not really had a chance to settle in until now. And I want to bring up Ryan Rupert. Because he's gotten more playing time in the last couple of games than he has for a good chunk of the season. And after the game against Oklahoma City, I'm not sure if you heard the comments from Chauncey Billups, but he referred to Ryan Rupaire as the hardest working guy on the team. And when he was asked where he has improved, he kind of shook his head and said, everywhere, man, his defense, his rebound, his shooting. He's the hardest working guy, and it's been that way since training camp. He's the youngest guy on the roster. And I was told this, I'm sure it's true. I was told this by somebody with the Blazers, and I haven't been able to confirm it, but he is younger than anybody available to be drafted this year. And he's been in the league for a year. He is a young guy. English is not his first language. And there are some things, I thought it was interesting the way that Chauncey pointed it out and said, you know, English is not his first language. So when we change coverages defensively in the middle of a play, and I'm talking from the sideline, sometimes he doesn't understand it. And that language barrier can get in the way a little bit. So with Rupaire being somebody who they hope develops and has already come a long way to this point, what have you seen recently?
Well, I've seen that his remix minutes, and I have not seen the remix games, but clearly have impacted his comfort, confidence, and development.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Rupaire now plays hungry. I mean, he'll space the floor if that's his job, but he's putting the ball on the deck, whether he's getting a shot for himself or he's getting in the gap, he's making a play. That's the difference, Travis. And guys that play G League minutes in the NBA season and return to playing time opportunities versus guys that go down and play and come back and they don't get to play. You know, we're seeing the value of the Blazers G League team, the remix. And Ryan Rupaire, I think, is the poster for it.
Rupaire, Reith, Manaya, Ashton Hagens, Ibu Baji. There have been a number of guys who have gone back and forth. And with Hagens, you look at his first couple of games, and you look at that game against Detroit, where you're looking at him playing the entire fourth quarter and overtime. And I think that was his first game. And he's asked to play crunch time minutes and play point guard in crunch time minutes. And there were some times where he tried to do too much. And you could see that because at the time he was on a 10-day contract. He wasn't a two-way guy yet. And he was trying to stick in the league, and it affected the game. His recent games, you see him differently pass up situations that he knows other players on the team are better equipped to handle. He's only taken two three-pointers since those first two games. And he didn't make any of those in those first two games, but he hit a couple against Memphis. And you can see the wheels are turning because he was an all-star in the G League. He wasn't just, you know, some G League player. He was an all-star in the G League. And now things are starting to slow down for him a little bit when he is running the point.
You know, I certainly hate to make this about me, but I can identify with that experience. I was a G League All-Star that signed a 10-day contract to join the Chicago Bulls the night of the All-Star game. Got on a plane the next morning and met the Bulls in Philadelphia and played that night and played 21 minutes. So going from G League All-Star to being in an NBA game, I understand it. And the mentality is, okay, I got to be careful. Less is more. I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to assert myself. I don't know the plays. And you're just out there fumbling around. And where I'm going with this is I want to give this staff a lot of credit that this staff has found a way to take these young guys and empower them to where they're not looking over their shoulder. They're out there playing basketball competitively and playing hard, and I think for the most part, playing well.
Delano Banton, another one of those guys. Now, he had a little bit more NBA experience, right? This is his third year in the league. He's got a little run with Toronto and Boston, but not very much. And now he's getting big minutes with the Trailblazers. And from the minute you saw Delano Banton, you kind of you kind of gravitated towards him a little bit. You like him. Tell me why.
Well, he passes the eye test. You know, I look at every basketball player from a standpoint of, if I'm at the community center on Saturday morning and I'm trying to pick four guys to play with me and I want to stay on the floor, what does that look like? And when I look at Delano Banton, I'm like, I want him on my team because he handles the basketball. He makes plays for himself and others. He can score, right, off the bounce. He likes getting into the paint. He likes being in attack mode. And I like that about Delano Banton, that he's always attacking. Now, sometimes too aggressive, sometimes too many bounces, but he's comfortable and confident being in attack mode. And defensively, his length allows him to spread out and change passing angles when he's guarding the primary ball handler.
We've talked about all these young guys. We've talked about all of the things that they're doing to make these games competitive against Minnesota, against Oklahoma City. The team's tied for first in the Western Conference. And by the way, I don't know if you saw the news today that Karl Anthony Towns has a torn meniscus and is going to be out for a significant period of time. Just, diverting away from our conversation a little bit, that's really disappointing for Minnesota at this point.
Yeah, Minnesota is having a great year. And, you know, the development, the chemistry development of Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns has been outstanding. And the star power of Anthony Edwards, besides stretching too long and missing the opening tip the other night, is undeniable. So, you know, Minnesota, I think, has something good brewing. So certainly the loss of Karl Anthony Towns for any amount of time down the stretch of the season is significant.
So we talk about effort. We talk about, you know, the execution, which has been very good. We haven't talked much about the veterans in this stretch. Anthony Simons, the last two games, has been very good. Got off to a slow start in the first half against Oklahoma City, but 34 against Minnesota, 29 against Oklahoma City, has kept his team in the game down the stretch. Had that huge fourth quarter and overtime against Memphis in that second game. And this is really the first opportunity of him being the go-to scorer and the leader of this team. Even the last couple of years when Dame was out and he was the go-to guy, it was still Dame's team because Dame's still on the roster. Leonard Rose still sitting on the bench. He's not on the bench anymore. This is Ant's team. What have you seen from him in this past week?
Well, he's comfortable as a primary scorer. And the best indication of Anthony Simons' growth and development into that role is the fact that he's double-teamed every night.
Yeah,
I mean, Anthony Simons does not see single coverage anymore. And that's the best indication of where he has developed his game to. Now, we go to last night's game, and we've seen this over the last few games where he almost defers early in the game because of the coverage. And he's been better in the second half than he has in the first half because he figures it out. And so that's interesting to me because a lot of times the guy that gets double teamed is what you start the game with so that everybody else can get comfortable in the reaction, in the counters.
Right.
And the Blazers haven't quite got there yet in terms of first half counters to the double team. But the Blazers have been very good responding to double teams in the second half.
I thought, and to your point, the way that Anthony started the game, but he had 6 points at halftime. I think he had six field goal attempts in the first half. And like you talked about with getting other players comfortable while he is the center of the defensive attention, it allows them to get into an offensive flow. And in the month of March, I know this, we've seen four games in the month of March. Okay, this is a very small sample size. But in the month of March, the Blazers' offense has been a top five efficient offense in the NBA. When over the course of the year, they're 28th, 29th in the league, and they're doing it against, you know, two of those games are against top five defenses in Minnesota and Oklahoma City. And I think that says a lot to the players that are on the floor that have built that continuity and the leadership that we've seen.
The comfort and the confidence. I like to kind of use the analogy of be a server, don't be a waiter. And so earlier in the young guys' development, they would be waiters. They would stand around and wait for Anthony to make a play. They'd stand in the corner, you know, kind of just be a waiter. And now we see everybody's out there trying to serve. Everybody's trying to get to the paint. You see more player movement. You see better ball movement. You see better responses to double teams, more cohesive responses to the game within the game, the problems that emerge.
So depending on when you're listening to this, as we record this on Thursday, there's 6 games in 9 days. So 5 games in the next 7 days on this homestand with Houston and Toronto on Friday and Saturday. And then you get the juggernaut and the Boston Celtics. You get the Atlanta Hawks. You get the New York Knicks. So a busy homestand here coming up. Chauncey Billups talked before the game against Oklahoma City. He addressed some of the injuries. DeAndre Ayton was questionable with that hand injury. The fact that he was questionable and not doubtful tells me that he might be close to returning. It would be great to see him out on the floor. Scoot Henderson, again, according to coach, sounds like he could hopefully be back at some point this weekend. Doesn't sound like Malcolm Brogdon's going to be ready to come back anytime soon. He's still dealing with discomfort in his elbow. Shaedon Sharpe has resumed some light shooting, is what coach said. So in the near future, the players that we can hopefully expect back soon are DeAndre Ayton and Scoot Henderson. Now, that adds another layer into all of this because the players that have been playing have been contributing. And now you bring back in DeAndre, who is really, I mean, he was playing the best stretch of the season with the Blazers before he went out with that hand injury. And Scoot Henderson also playing the best stretch of his season. So now you add those guys into the mix and try and keep this flow going.
Yeah, it will be great if that happens. I mean, if this team can finish the season kind of where it hoped to start the season.
Yeah.
In terms of chemistry and continuity of Jeremy Grant and DeAndre Ayton and Anfernee Simons and Scoot Henderson all being on the floor. And then you sprinkle in the development that we've talked so much about on this podcast of the supporting cast. You know, now you go into the offseason knowing what you have. And I believe that's what Joe Cronin said at the trade deadline, that he liked the collection of players that the team had and that he wanted to see them play. He wanted to give them a chance to play.
Yeah, and he's got plenty of time over the summer to make some moves. There was nothing that he could have done at the trade deadline that he can't do this summer. And I'm not making excuses. I'm not saying that he can't do. No, anything that he could have done at the trade deadline, he can still get done this summer. There is still a lot of room for him to make moves to reshape and retool this roster. So we've talked a lot about the personnel, but I want to get into some of the X's and O's because Jabari Walker said something after the game, the first win against Memphis on Friday night, that your ears perked up. And this was something that you really gravitated to because it explained a lot. He talked about paint touches, and we knew that paint touches were important for this team. And they were a focus from the beginning of the year. But because of the personnel, things have kind of changed for that. And I'm going to paraphrase and translate what he was saying because he tweaked the numbers a little bit. Halftime of that game, Jacob Moalem, who is the analytics guy for the Trailblazers, relayed some information to Chauncey, and he relayed that information to the team that in that particular game in the first half, when they got the ball in the paint, they were averaging 1.4 points per possession. When there were zero paint touches, they were averaging a half a point per possession. That is a drastic change. And I talked to Jacob about this, and he said, you know, over the course of the season, it's not quite that drastic. When there is one paint touch, it's about 1.1 points per possession. It's at about 0.8 when you don't get the ball in the paint. And then it just goes up exponentially from there with 2-3+ paint touches per game. So boil that down into layman's terms. The ball touches the paint one time in a possession, you've got a much better chance of scoring than you do when the ball does not get into the paint. What did that mean to you when you heard that?
Well, when I heard it, I had never heard it quantified like that. I always generally knew that when you get the ball to the paint, you've compromised the defense. You've collapsed the defense. And if you kick it out, you have closeouts. If a shot blocker rotates over to you and you shoot it, you open up the avenue to the offensive board. So I always knew that the ball in the paint was a positive for the offense and that it put pressure on the defense. I'd never heard it quantified with data. And when I heard it, the reason why my ears perked up is because I had been watching the team for 5 or 7 games. To me, over execute. I was like, gosh, why are we, you know, turning down opportunities, turning? And when I heard that Jabari say that, I then understood the intentionality of getting the execution to a point where you could get a paint touch.
I want to slow that down just for a second, because I for people who don't quite understand some of those details, the one thing that you said just now that stood out is over execute. Okay. Over executing and turning shots down, turning opportunities down to get the ball in the paint. Why is that important in this context?
It's important because you want to keep your floor balanced offensively so that you can offensive rebound and so that you can get back in transition and set your defense. So your offense of execution transitions into your defensive stability and continuity. So if you shoot quickly or you surprise a teammate with a shot, and then all of a sudden it becomes the first pass to your opponent's fast break, now your offense has let your defense down.
Yeah.
And so when I see execution, I'm looking for floor balance. And then every coach has a way that they define a good possession. Like for me in college playing for Larry Brown, he said, it's not a good possession if we didn't have a chance to offensive rebound. And so I was like, oh, as the point guard, then I got to make sure that when we run a play or whatever play I call, I engage a certain player into the coverage so that this player has a better chance to offensive rebound. So without getting too into the weeds, Travis, simply put, you want to move the defense.
Yeah.
And one of the best ways, there's two ways, primary ways the defense gets moved in the NBA. Ball screens and paint touches.
I read something interesting yesterday that, so in terms of rebound rate, Blazers are last in the league. Okay, but they're top 5 in the league in offensive rebound rate. This would be the 5th consecutive year that the team with the worst defensive rebounding rate in the league is top 5 in the league in offensive rebounding. And I know I just threw that out at you and you haven't had time to formulate a thought on that. But what is the first thing that stands out when I tell you that?
Every team is not committed to offensive rebounding. First of all, I mean, the Oklahoma City Thunder are one of them. I mean, yeah. Mark Dagnall was talked about getting out rebounded, and in a nice way, he said, I don't care. It's not a priority for me and for our team. So offensive rebounding is a style, a preferred way to play. It makes sense for the Blazers, because of the injuries and the different guys on the floor. And there's a lot of reasons why it makes sense for the Blazers to prioritize offensive rebounding. Defensive rebounding is a different animal. It requires physicality. It requires being in proper position. There's commitment and energy.
This time of year is fun, Michael. And I know that the Blazers aren't making the playoffs, so there's not a playoff push for us here. But I'm excited to see what the last month of the season or so is going to hold because of all the things that we talked about. The weather is starting to get warmer. March Madness is kicking off here really soon. The month of March, for a lot of reasons, is always really fun for me.
Oh, I like the month of March for a lot of reasons, Travis. First of all, March Madness, college basketball. Come on, let's be true that we take our eye off the NBA a little bit in March.
Yeah.
Before we return to focus in April and the NBA playoffs. So March, there's an energy around basketball in March for a lot of reasons. But March also signifies a time to reflect on your team and your season. What did you see? What did you learn? What did you do? What do you need? You know, March is kind of that month that a lot of those evaluations get formalized and firmed up.
I don't know how we got here so fast, but here we are. Thanks so much for listening to the Section 113 podcast. We've got 5 more games on this homestand, 20 more, 21 more games left in the season. The next one is Friday night against the Houston Rockets. 7 o'clock tip, 6 o'clock coverage on the Trailblazers Radio Network, our flagship station, 620 AM Rip City Radio and across the state of Oregon. Michael, great stuff, man. Looking forward to seeing you Friday night at Moda.
Thanks a lot, Travis.
All right, we'll see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to the Section 113 podcast.